With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The USDA released their monthly cattle on feed report after today's close, and that report showed on feed at 100%. That was just above the average analyst estimate of 99%. Placements at 104%, well above the average analyst estimate of 99%. And marketing's 93%, largely in line with the estimates of 92.3%.
Oliver Slope with Blue Line Futures. USDA reporting 11.55 million head of cattle on feed as of March 1st. Essentially, that was unchanged. The placements, 1.61 million head. And most of the cattle entering the feedlots in that 7 to 899 pound range, really suggesting continued feeder availability as we move into finishing systems. Operationally, marketing's dropping to 1.5 million head, down 7% from last year, second lowest February level since 1996. Also slower movement out of feedlots, keeping more cattle on feed longer. It's contributing to heavier weights and delayed beef production timing. It's also putting pressure on cash prices, which last week came in at $2.35. Milk production increased in the month of February as herd growth and improved yields continue to expand U.S. dairy output. It's adding pressure on prices but supporting export potential. USDA reporting U.S. milk production at 18.3 billion pounds, up 2.9% from a year ago. In those 24 major states, production reached 17.6 billion pounds, up 3.1%. Output per cow also improving, national averages rising to just under 1,900 pounds per head. It reflects continued gains in productivity. Operationally, herd expansion remains a key driver. U.S. dairy herd reached 9.62 million head, up 211,000 from last year, and continuing a steady upward trend. Producers maintaining larger herds while also improving milk components and efficiency. Expansion remains concentrated, though, in key dairy states. That includes Texas, Idaho, and South Dakota. Lawmakers working toward a new farm bill before a September deadline, with broader policy provisions beyond commodity programs remaining critical for ag. House Ag Committee advanced the Farm Food and National Security Act of 2026. Earlier in the month, a wide-ranging proposal covering 12 titles, including conservation, trade, credit, energy, and crop insurance. Bill spans more than 800 pages and incorporates 181 provisions from individual lawmakers, reflecting the scope of policy priorities. Now, Joe Outlaws with the Agricultural Food Policy Center at Texas A&M says the bill includes updates to livestock marketing rules tied to California's Prop 12. It reauthorizes the Conservation Reserve Program at 27 million acres, raises farm credit borrowing limits, and the changes all aim to support producers who are right now facing tighter margins and financial pressure in the current farm economy. He says regionally, producers or provisions affecting livestock, conservation acreage, and rural credit access could have varying impacts across operations. It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This is Agriculture Today.
Today's hearing provides the subcommittee an opportunity to review XM's work and authorities as we consider reauthorization of the bank this year.
Representative Warren Davidson from Ohio, chairman of a House Financial Services subcommittee, at a hearing on reauthorizing the Export-Import Bank of the U.S.
Established in 1934, EXIM's mission is, quote, to contribute to maintaining or increasing employment of United States workers, end quote. As America's export credit agency, EXIM contributes to the global competitiveness of our exporters and their employees, providing financing when the market will not or when foreign exports are backed by another export credit agency. Through its loans, loan guarantees, and insurance programs, the bank's financing supported nearly 40,000 jobs and over $12 billion in exports in fiscal year 2024. EXIM faces a competitive export credit landscape from large foreign export credit agencies. Nowhere is this competition more acute than with the People's Republic of China, which continues to set export records. The PRC is the world's largest provider of export credit, and it operates outside the OECD arrangement. In 2024, the PRC provided exporters with over $23 billion in medium and long-term loans, quadruple what EXIM provided to American firms. To help EXIM counter this challenge, in 2019, Congress created the China and Transformational Export Credits Program, or CTEP. CTEP is widely supported, and I'm eager to see it reauthorized this year. At the same time, we must renew our work with U.S. allies to counter China's disregard for agreements they've entered into, like the World Trade Agreement, where they committed to be a market economy. This means exerting pressure together through forums such as the International Monetary Fund, the OECD, and the Paris Club. The administration recognizes the challenges our exporters face from China and is giving the bank an increasingly prominent role supporting key initiatives, from AI exports to critical minerals projects such as the $1.4 billion letter of interest for Graphite One in my home state of Ohio. Thank you. As EXIM looks to take on more strategic projects, I would hope EXIM will leverage authorities to expand support for nuclear exports, a longtime priority for this committee. A more ambitious role for the bank must also come with tougher accountability, particularly regarding processes and human resources. We are eager to work with you to strengthen the bank and its operations so that American exporters have the support they need to compete against subsidized foreign competition. EXIM puts America first by leveling the playing field and ensuring that our country is competing with other countries, and companies simply need to compete with other companies. So I look forward to your testimony and our discussion today on how we can properly position the bank to achieve their goals through this reauthorization process.
Ranking member of the subcommittee from Ohio, Joyce Beatty.
We must ensure that the bank continues to work for small businesses, create local jobs, support emerging industries where the United States can compete, and strengthen U.S. supply chains. We should also consider targeting reforms to increase XM's flexibility so that it can more effectively compete with countries that aggressively support their own industries.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
This isn't a 2008-style food crisis for developed markets.
Considering what's happening in the Strait of Hormuz and across the Middle East, Catherine Rooney Vera, Chief Marketing Strategist with StoneX, says there's actually a lag for food price increases.
The impact is moderate in the U.S., but it's significant in import-dependent regions like Africa, and it's meaningful for us when you're starting from a 3% core PCE inflation. CPI obviously is what includes food and energy prices, but there is some pass-through. So generally 3 weeks, 4 weeks to mid-April, the calendar doesn't negotiate. Now, this doesn't hit retail prices immediately. It's important to understand there's a significant lag here. The lag is 6 to 12 months, could be longer, but here's the sequence. March through April, fertilizer shocks hit input prices. April, mid-April to mid-May, planting is the we have the deadline. May through July, reduced fertilizer application, crop stress begins. August through September, harvest comes in materially lower than historical norms. Grain prices spike. October through December, food processors and distributors pass through higher costs. And then into early 2027, this scenario leads to peak retail food inflation showing up on the shelves at the stores. People feel it. So that 6 to 12 month lag is why the market is missing this, because markets price kind of like right now. CF Industries is pricing it today because they sell fertilizer, but the S&P, consumer discretionary stocks, and inflation expectations are not yet pricing this very real risk and what could hit consumers later this year. Now let's layer into this the Fed's position. Core PCE for 12 months ending February was 3% flat. That's 100 basis points above the Fed's 2% target. We've spent 5 years above the Fed's 2% target. This week at the March 18th FOMC meeting, an overwhelming majority of participants said inflation risks are weighted to the upside. Not one single member flagged downside risk. Not one. The Fed's 2026 inflation projection is 2.7%. That's the fifth year above two. The actual data is running hotter than that forecast right now. And we haven't even seen the oil shock or the food shock fully hit yet. So if you add in oil shock and food shock, adding 2 to 4, let's call it 2 percentage points on top of 3%, you're building towards an upside inflation shock to headline inflation by late 2026 in our scenario framework. So the Fed cannot cut into that. They're not going to cut into that. They also can't hike into a supply shock without crushing demand. That doesn't mean they won't hike. They very well could hike. We've seen that in history. But that right now they're stuck between inflation risk and recession risk. We called this at StoneX on day one. Urea is up 44% since then. CF Industries hit record highs. The market priced the spot move in fertilizer. It is not priced the delayed transmission into food inflation later this year into early next year. We have about a month until mid-April, month and a half into early May. If fertilizer doesn't flow by then, you're looking at a lost growing season. You're looking at harvest shortfalls in August and September. You're looking at food inflation spiking into year end this year, early next year. The fertilizer clock is not a metaphor. It's a reality. It's an agricultural calendar constraint, and the market's not pricing it. So long fertilizer producers, underweight consumer discretionary exposed to food input costs, and positioned for sticky inflation through year end.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
with Agriculture Today. Here's Tony St. James.
It's a big jump in soybean acres. There's a variety of things that would lead to that. In the past, whenever you've seen an anomaly of a corn acreage number that's super high, of course, bean acres are typically low on those years. Directly following that year, we typically see a shift back into more soybean acres.
Matt Bennett is CEO of AgMarket.net.
Last year, virtually every state in the Corn Belt planted less soybean acres in 25. And so your corn and beans to corn guys are going to lead me to believe they're going to go back into soybeans this year, you know, at least on those particular acres. Whenever you look at, of course, liquidity draw here over the last couple, 3 years, there's no doubt the grower in total has a little bit less cash in their pocket. And clearly it puts putting soybean in crop takes a little bit less money. You know, whenever you're looking at November beans trading 1150, hedging off risk at those levels is something we really haven't been able to enjoy much as far as a hedging program is concerned over the last couple of years. And so we do think that those things in total are going to really bump soybean acres up here for 26.
Does say Middle East situation could impact corn acres.
There's no question that energy prices have spiked. Urea prices have spiked along with it. A lot of urea flows, 20 to 25% of the urea flows through the Strait of Hormuz. So unfortunately, not all growers can put all their fertilizer needs on in the fall. You know, and so a lot of growers are, you know, beholden to what spring prices are going to look like. And unfortunately, that's not necessarily worked well in our behalf here over the last couple, 3 weeks. And so I definitely think that some later switching could occur. I don't know that that'll all be reflected in this acreage report, but we certainly think that that's going to put a little bit of a damper on big corn acres, just simply what it's going to cost to put those acres out with these fertilizer costs going up so much.
How about wheat?
No doubt. When you look at wheat over the last couple of years, it's just been tough to get any sort of a rally going, and profitability has been a major concern. You know, it looked like winter wheat acres down somewhat from what earlier indications might have been. You know, and you look at spring wheat acres, and I know that some of our guys in spring wheat country have indicated that, you know, seed sales on spring wheat have been off somewhat, and it's a fairly well-known fact. So, you know, we feel like dropping down on wheat acres, you know, well, not even a million acres from a year ago, but a year ago, 45.3, and then you come down here to 44.6. We feel like that's a realistic number. We feel like you're going to lose at least a half million acres of wheat this year as far as all wheat's concerned.
On total acres.
The combined acres last year was right at 180 million acres for corn and soybeans. This year, we feel like that's going to actually creep a little bit higher. There's a variety of reasons for that. But for one thing, rice and cotton acres are projected to be a little bit lower. Where those acres go, of course, depends on where you're at. A lot of folks in the Delta are telling us that a lot of those acres are going over soybeans. Whereas you get over into, for instance, the panhandle of Texas down into cattle country, and there's no doubt that some of those cotton acres will probably go to corn just due to the demand for corn in that part of the world. But we feel like whenever you put 94.4 and 86.1 together, you know, it's 180 and a half. That's actually going to be potentially a record if it turns out the way that we think it will. And so with that being the case, you know, we feel like acreage will be robust this year from our vantage point. Corn, soybeans probably going to be, you know, taking acres away from some of those other crops that, quite frankly, have really struggled whenever it comes to profitability. Cotton and rice definitely are going to give some of those up.
It's Agriculture Today.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This is Agriculture Today.
Everyone is watching crude, but the Strait of Hormuz also carries a third of global seaport fertilizer trade.
Catherine Rooney Vera is chief marketing strategist with StoneX.
That supply is offline. And we're now about a month out from the Northern Hemisphere's planting season, and the dates on the calendar don't negotiate. Mid-April to May, that's the Northern Hemisphere's spring planting window. Before mid-April, this is a supply delay. After mid-April to May, it becomes a lost growing season. The fertilizer clock is the real deadline, not the oil price. On March 3rd, we at StoneX published a note flagging fertilizer as the sleeper risk in this crisis. Since then, New Orleans barge urea prices have surged from $4.75 per ton to $5.20 to $5.50. CF Industries stock hit a record high of $137.44 on March 12th. So the market validated our call on the price move. We were one of the early voices on the risk to fertilizer. Well, everyone was talking about oil. But fertilizer producers, CF Industries, Nutrien, Mosaic, they're all pricing tight supply and have immediate pricing power. So these names and these this call has worked out pretty well since March 3rd. But here's what the market hasn't priced yet. The transmission into retail food inflation. We did a study on that, which I'd like to share with you all today. That happens with a 6 to 12 month lag. So if we don't get a reopening very, very soon, we're talking in the next few weeks, not few months, it's going to hit late 2026 into 2027. And fertilizer producers are pricing it. The broader market is not pricing the impact on food prices that a prolonged closure and a lost planting season will have on food prices. So mid-April to May, that's not a soft target. It's when things happen in terms of the planting season. You can't delay planting materially without yield loss. Corn, soybeans, wheat, they all have optimal planting windows. The agronomic optimum for most major crops is late April to early May. After that, yields can drop pretty sharply. If fertilizer doesn't flow in the next, let's call it 4 weeks, today's March 20th, farmers plant with reduced inputs or they skip fields completely. That will translate directly into lower yields come harvest time, which is in August or September. Based on empirical pass-through research, and we've looked at this from OECD, FAO, and the central banks, a sustained disruption or, you know, halt in fertilizer of this magnitude can add 2 to 4 percentage points to food inflation in developed markets. And that's not talking about emerging markets that are more vulnerable, but we're talking 2 to 4 percentage points additional. This is additive to food costs, inflation, over the next 12 to 18 months. So import-dependent regions, even more import-dependent, we're talking specifically Africa, for example, they could see 4 to 8 percentage points added to food costs. And especially when you layer in FX and energy pass-through effects.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I think one of the biggest takeaways for this year is that whenever you have a big acreage year on corn, typically the next year you fall back 3.5 to 5 million acres.
Matt Bennett is CEO of AgMarket.net.
We don't necessarily expect anything a whole lot different, whereas previously we felt like you might have 96 million acres. A lot has happened, you know, since those thoughts had come out. So we feel strongly that soybean acres will be impressive. At the same time, this report is one that doesn't fail to disappoint whenever it comes to surprises. And so, you know, it'd be very interesting to see kind of what the USDA comes out with. But we as a team would be very surprised if soybean acres aren't up substantially this year.
Josh Strine is with Purdue Center for Commercial Ag.
Futures prices are often discussed when exploring current and expected crop prices. However, due to locational variations, future prices are far from representative of what all producers will receive. This is where basis comes into play. For those unfamiliar, crop basis is calculated as local cash prices minus future prices. It represents local variation in crop prices caused by differences in supply and demand. While basis can be calculated for any futures contract, today we'll focus on nearby May contracts. Generally, there's a period of basis weakening during harvest, and then it increases throughout the rest of the marketing year, as local stocks are depleted. Over the past month, corn basis movements across the eastern Corn Belt has deviated from the common trend. Historically, we have seen region-wide basis strengthening between February and March. Over the past 3 years, the basis in southeast Indiana strengthened by 17 cents per bushel between the third week of February and the second week of March. This year, basis only increased by 7 cents per bushel. In southwest Iowa, the historical average corn basis increased by 11 cents per bushel. This year, basis decreased by 1 cent per bushel. These two examples of softer basis movements are representative of trends across the region. Due to sharp increases earlier in the marketing year, corn basis in Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio are stronger than the historical averages. Basis in Iowa and Illinois are below the historical averages. In the north and west part of Iowa, basis is below negative 40 cents per bushel, more than 30 cents per bushel below the historical average. The extreme swing has resulted in region going from having the strongest basis historically to the weakest. On the other hand, Ohio, which has some of the weakest basis over the past 3 years, now has the strongest basis. Much of this may come down to differences in production between the two states. Corn production in Ohio is down 4% from the three-year average, while corn production in Iowa is up 9% from the three-year historic average. Turning to soybeans, the picture over the past month has been more encouraging. Across the eastern Corn Belt, soybeans basis has been strengthening. For example, in central Indiana, basis has increased by 7 cents per bushel since the third week of February. In central Iowa, basis has increased by 6 cents per bushel. These changes are in line with or just slightly behind the historical averages. A belt of weakening basis does exist in Illinois in the crop reporting districts that border the Mississippi and Ohio rivers in southeast Indiana. In the six crop reporting districts, basis has decreased by 1 to 3 cents per bushel. Even so, these districts are still above neighboring regions in Iowa and Ohio. Zooming out to the broader picture, Indiana sets the benchmark with many of the strongest local basis levels. Unlike corn, Illinois soybean basis is among the best in the region, and Iowa among the weakest. Overall, regional soybean basis patterns are tracking much closer to historical averages in corn. So what does this all mean going into April? The historical average would suggest that both corn and soybean basis will increase over the next month. However, in the past week, corn basis has decreased or held constant in all but three crop reporting districts, and soybean basis has decreased or held constant in all but two crop reporting districts. Even if basis does increase month over month, weekly volatility makes watching your local basis important headed into April.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.